Good morning, everyone. Is everyone in? Great. Thank you for all for coming and joining us for this review of our interim results of the 24 weeks ended the 3rd of March 2012. We haven't changed the format of this presentation, so I will go through the financial and business highlights to begin with before handing over to John, who will go through the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow, and a couple of other schedules before he hands back to me, and I will take you through the performance of the individual businesses within the group. This has been a good start to what we still think will be a very good year for ABF. Revenues are up 11% to £5.76 billion. Adjusted operating profit is up 6% at the half to £412 million. Adjusted profit before tax up 3% to £363 million. Adjusted earnings per share up 5% to 34.4 pence. And the interim dividend we're announcing today, we will be increasing by 8% to 8.5 pence, so above the rate of adjusted earnings per share growth. Our net debt at the half year is £1.59 billion after another half of heavy capital investment of £326 million. The highlights of the business then are these. Good growth clearly in group revenue and also profit, with, we think, profit growth then to accelerate in the second half. Our sugar businesses, AB Sugar, substantially ahead. We think the decline in Primark's margin has now ended, and so that business is now returning to good profit growth. You'll have seen the sales increase is 15%, but the earnings growth in the first half is rather below that, as margins, as we flagged, have reduced. Twinings Ovaltine then within the grocery business, we wanted to note the growth there continues. Unsatisfactory performance, which I'll go into later in the presentation, in both Australia and our yeast business. And just to highlight one other financial highlight, the group cash flow in the first half is substantially better than it was in the corresponding period last year. John.
I will start this morning by a small apology. I've actually got a slightly hoarse voice. I think I've been shouting at too many football games over the last week or so. So my apologies for a hoarse delivery this morning. Looking at the income statement, revenue increased by 11% to £5.8 billion. Adjusted operating profit, which excludes the amortization of non-operating intangibles and profits less losses on the sale of PP&E, was 6% ahead of last year at £412 million. Movements in currency exchange rates had no material impact on the translation of sales or profits. I've included a table of average and period-end exchange rates at the end of your slide pack. The US and Euro exchange rates were little changed, and a weakening of the South African rand was broadly offset by a strengthening of the Australian dollar. Unadjusted operating profit was 6% ahead at £378 million. The net interest expense increased from £39 million to £48 million as a result of the higher level of net borrowings at the beginning of the period, and that followed last year's big increase in working capital and the significant level of capital investment. Profit before tax at £329 million was 3% ahead of last year, and on our adjusted basis was also ahead by 3%. Moving on to tax, with no tax arising on the very small profits on the sale of non-current assets, both this year and last, and with no sales of businesses in either period, the components of the tax charge are less complicated than usual. Last year's underlying tax rate, to remind you, for the full year was 24.6%. However, the rate applied at the interim stage last year did not reflect reductions in the UK corporation tax rate that hadn't been enacted at that time, and also with a different mix of profits that transpired in the full year, the rate at the half year was higher at 26.6%. The underlying rate applied in this year's interim results is 25.9%, which takes into account the reduction in the UK corporation tax rate to 25% effective from the 1st of April. However, it does not reflect the Chancellor's recent 1% further reduction in rates to 24%, which applied from the 1st of April 2012, because this was announced after the balance sheet date, and the part year benefit of this reduction will be reflected in the full year rate. Earnings and dividends. Adjusted earnings per share were 5% ahead of last year at 34.4 pence. The increase in adjusted earnings per share was 4% to 31.7. We've stated that the profit improvements in this financial year would be weighted towards the second half. The board has therefore decided to increase the interim dividend ahead of the first half year increase in adjusted earnings per share. The interim dividend will be 8.5 pence per share, and that's an increase of 8% on last year. Turning to the balance sheet, net assets increased by 323 million to 6.2 billion. Translation again had very little impact on the sterling value of the net assets this year. The increase in PP&E and other non-current assets of 341 reflects the continued capital investment in the group, and that's net of depreciation. Net working capital was 214 million higher than last year. That's mainly driven by inventories. Inventories were up by 172 million, and that's primarily driven by the increase in sugar, which is both volume and price. Net debt increased by 231 million, so slightly less than we expected, to 1.59 billion. And that was largely to fund higher working capital. Since the year end, we've completed a private placement of senior notes to a number of UK and US institutional investors, raising $526 million with a range of maturities from 2019 to 2024. The average interest coupon at 3.66% clearly benefited from the current very low level of long-term bond yields. This further diversifies our sources of funding, lengthens our debt maturity profile, and so enhances the group's financial strength. I actually expect at the end of the year, at the financial year end, that very little of the group's funding now will actually be provided by the banks. Provisions fell by 68 million as balances established in prior periods were utilised, notably the rationalisation of the meat business in Australia and provisions acquired with Azucarera. The group's pension scheme showed a net deficit at the half year of 57 million, and that compared with last year's net surplus of 41, and that results primarily from a fall in the discount rate applied to the scheme's liabilities, and you guys will be aware better than me that that really was the reduction in long-term rates that occurred in sort of August, September of last year. Turning now to cash flow. I mean, I've got to say I'm very pleased with a significant improvement. George had it on the highlights at the beginning, but you can see here that the free cash outflow of 170 million is almost 200 million better than the outflow last year. Now, just as a reminder, ABF normally has an outflow in the first half, so there's nothing unusual there, and that reflects the build of working capital in the northern sugar businesses. but gradually falling commodity costs and a lower level of capital expenditure meant that this outflow was substantially better this year. The working capital outflow was 74 million less than last year, with a substantial increase driven in sugar, driven by higher volumes and values of inventory, but that was more than offset by a reduction in Primark's inventory, and that followed very strong Christmas trading at Primark, and then also in the grocery businesses where commodity costs have receded. CapEx was 68 million lower. I think we'd flagged that at the last full year. That was lower than last year, with almost all of the reduction arising in the food businesses, where a number of long-term projects have either completed or are nearing completion. Investment in new stores and refits for Primark continued as expected at the level of last year. Tax payments increased by 19 million to 70 million in the first half, and net interest paid was also higher, reflecting the higher level of net debt. The most significant element of the change in the other caption there, from last year's outflow of 20 million to this year's outflow of 1 million, was last year's purchase of shares for the group's employee share ownership plan. No new acquisitions were completed in the period, with only a small amount of deferred consideration settled relating to prior year acquisitions. Moving on to the segmental analysis. We've made a minor reclassification of last year's sales and profits, and that's between ingredients and grocery segments, to put them onto a consistent basis this year following a change of management responsibility. Revenues were ahead in all segments, and the substantial increase in profits from sugar clearly were the driver of the group's overall 6% increase in adjusted operating profit. Grocery profit was lower, mainly driven by charges taken in the period for restructuring, and it was also due to the performance of the meat business in Australia. Agriculture performed very well, and it should be remembered that its results include the profit of its Frontier joint venture, and we don't consolidate the revenues there because it's a 50-50 joint venture. So Frontier's profit was lower this year, and this had a disproportionate effect on segment margins. Ingredients profit was weaker this year as a result of the challenges faced by the yeast business. The 120 basis point margin reduction at Primark was in line with, I think, previous guidance, and arose because of our decision to absorb higher cotton prices. But even after that, note that the profit of Primark was ahead of that last year. Primark's profitability can now be expected to improve as the benefit of lower cotton prices come through. Central costs were higher in 2011, and that was due, as a reminder to you, to the self-insured costs of the Queensland floods in Australia. Although the overall group profit margin fell from 7.5% to 7.1% in this half year, I fully expect margin improvement in the second half and for the year as a whole for the group. Average capital employed for the group was substantially higher than last year, reflecting higher values in inventory for the sugar and agriculture segments and capital investment ahead of depreciation. The return on average capital employed for the group reduced to 14%. The lower return at Primark mainly reflects continuing capital investment, some of which relates to stores yet to be opened. And actually, George will share with you really quite a full pipeline of stores still to be opened for Primark later on in the presentation. But I would point out that the retail return on capital employed, I think, is strong at 18%. By geography, profit in the UK was sharply ahead, driven by British Sugar. Profit and margin increases in Europe and Africa were the result of much improved performances from Illovo and Azucarera. Weakness in the Americas was really mainly driven by profitability in AB Mauri. The lackluster profit in Asia Pacific was the consequence of the problems experienced by the meat business in George Weston Foods, lower prices for sugar in China, and AB Mauri. At that point, I'll hand back to George. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I have a different theory on John's hoarse voice. It's his birthday today, and I think he started celebrating 24 hours too early. Let me start, as I usually do then, with our sugar businesses, AB Sugar, where we've had an extremely good first half and will, I'm sure, have a very good second half as well. In contrast to last year, we had enjoyed excellent sugar processing campaigns, really, really good sugar campaigns in the UK and in Spain. We've had a better performance out of Illovo, and I'll come on to that in a moment. And we've seen strong regional pricing, obviously in Europe, but in Africa as well, as well as in Europe. Turning then in more detail to our European sugar businesses, sugar production in the UK is up 30% on a year ago, 1.31 million tonnes. Record, that comes about from a record beet yields. The average beet yield in the UK was 75.6 tonnes per hectare, which is a record by some way. The previous best was in 2009, when we saw field yields of 71.7 tonnes per hectare. We've been working with the with farmers and seed companies for many years in the UK to drive field yields up, and we've seen spectacular benefit from all that work this year. The sugar content then in that beet was extremely high. 18.4% sugar content by weight against 16.4% a year ago. Those were the two which combined then to give us that that crop. The factory performances then, and we've been investing in the factories heavily for as long as I can remember, was also extremely good. We set records in Bury, in Wissington, across all as an average, and taken together with obviously good pricing has produced very, very good financial returns for our UK sugar business. Last thing to say about our UK sugar business, Vivergo is the ethanol plant being built in Hull in a joint venture with BP and DuPont. That will report up through UK Sugar, and it is in commissioning now. Turning to Spain, again, we had an excellent campaign in the north of Spain, which is where the bulk of the sugar beet comes from. Last year, farmers achieved 90.7 tonnes per hectare in the north. This year, it was 105. Again, there's a project, multi-year project, to drive field yields up in Spain. The reason that Spanish yields are higher than the UK is that most of that land is irrigated. Factory extraction rates were also higher in Spain. I think that some of that at least is the benefit of British Sugar know-how brought to Azucarera since we've owned that business. And finally, the refinery in Guadalete is operating close to capacity, or operated close to capacity, through the first half of the year. If I move on then from the UK to China, we've been making good further progress in the north, the beet area. Production is well up. A greater area was planted with sugar beet than previously. The field yield there, and again, the project in the north is heavily driven, the future profitability of it is heavily driven by field yields. That was also up, and the operations in the factories was improved again on a previous year. In the south of China, in contrast, the cane yields were poor. We were coming out at the end of a drought, two-year drought in the south. We've had less cane to process as a consequence, and the sugar content of that cane is lower, and the extraction rate of the potential sugar in the cane is also down. Prices drifted a bit lower in China, nowhere near back down to where they were a couple of years ago, but they've come off by about 500 RMB per tonne. Moving on to Illovo there, where we produced less sugar as a consequence of a drought in South Africa and lower sucrose contents really across the piece, but sold that sugar for higher prices both in the region and also in our export markets. We expect to see more sugar produced in the season that has just started. The South African crop will recover nicely now that it started raining, and the Zambian and the Swaziland sugar factories will be operating close to capacity. You will have read about political uncertainties, to say the very least, in Mali. That makes our Mali project, which we've been working on now for the best part of, I think Illovo has been at it for about 9 years, I think that makes the future of that project quite uncertain. Our agricultural business, we thought that last year was going to be the best we could do. We had very attractive high levels of volatility for the trading part of that business, Frontier. This year we're delighted that the profit remains up near last year's high levels. Revenues and profits are well ahead in the feed business. AB Vista, which is our specialty animal feed ingredients business, that continues to grow really well. And although Frontier has less volatility to take advantage of in its grain trading, the other half of the business, which is crop inputs into UK farmers, that is going along extremely well at the moment. If I could just digress for a moment and tell you about a significant product launch within AB Vista, a product which we call Quantum Blue. It's a new phytase enzyme. We think its results, and it goes into essentially chicken feed. It improves feed conversion rates in poultry in particular. We think it is a substantially better enzyme. It performs substantially better than any of its competitors. How significant is that? Well, enzyme market is £2.5 billion in total. Feed is the second largest sector of the enzyme market after detergents. We estimate the market size of feed enzyme to be about €500 million. These are all in euros. And within feed enzymes, phytase is about 55% of the feed enzyme market. So this is a not insignificant product launch. And we have registrations in the USA and Brazil, Mexico, Thailand and India, and we expect to get registrations for this product in Europe next year. Moving on then to our grocery businesses, we've taken significant restructuring costs in the first half, and I'll go into those in a little more detail later. George Weston Foods has struggled particularly with the performance, with the commissioning costs, most notably of the meat factory in just north of Melbourne. UK grocery brands have performed well, and there's been really good further growth from Twinings Ovaltine as well. In the UK then, we've been focusing most heavily on reducing the cost base in Allied Bakeries. We're in the midst of a multi-year capital investment project that has allowed us in this year to close two small bakeries. We've also, independent of the capital project, gone through a project to reduce overhead in the business. the cost base in the bakery business is being addressed in a very substantial way. Kingsmill is performing well within within the bakery portfolio. Its sales are still growing. Elsewhere in the grocery portfolio in the UK, Silver Spoon is having a very good year, not least in home baking outside the sugar ranges. We've launched a product we're calling Truvia, which is one of it's a brand of stevia. Stevia is a high intensity natural sweetener, which was registered for sale in the UK earlier this year. Ryvita, both in the original crisp bread and also associated brands, is also having a very good year as well. Just one last thing on Allied Bakeries. For the fourth year in a row, Allied Bakeries was voted the grocery industry's branded bakery supplier of the year, and we're very proud not only that we awarded it this year, but that we continue to be marked out as the best of the bakery suppliers. Twinings, Ovaltine, then revenue and profit growth. The advertising campaign, I think we showed you one of the ads last time we met together. That has been aired very successfully. Twinings brand itself is growing strongly in the United States, and that's very encouraging. And then Ovaltine in the developing markets is continuing to see very good volume and value sales growth. And despite all the floods in Thailand earlier this year, we've seen good growth in the Thai market as well. They overcame the challenges of those floods very well indeed. Now, celebrating the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, we are a patriotic lot at ABF. We do take great pleasure in the Queen's Jubilee, not least for the commercial opportunity that it affords us. For a limited period only, and I think it's 2 weeks, we have Queensmill replacing Kingsmill. That is being well accepted by all the retail trade. We have celebration tins of tea. We hadn't decided whether we'd run out or whether we have given you some in your goodie bags, but that will be available for, I think, a 6 week period only. Ryvita has got in on the act too. And then finally, not to be outdone by anyone in the grocery businesses, Primark have an attractive range of t-shirts priced at £5 for those that want to share their patriotism with their neighbors. Moving on then quickly to ACH. Who've had a good start to the year, better performance out of our oil brand Mazola. Spices volumes were impacted for a while when we led a price increase. They've now recovered. We've launched four significant new products across the range of brands that we have there. There are launch costs, but those product innovations are good ones, and early sales are good. And then in Mexico, we relaunched Capullo to compete more effectively in a difficult competitor environment. Stratus, which is the joint venture that we created with ADM to take our commodity oils business and food service businesses, that business has shown further improvement. I think we'll get profit growth from it yet, but that joint venture is going very well. Australia then, which has George Weston Foods, which has turned in frankly disappointing results in the first half. I said to you last time we met that we had three challenges in Australia. The first was to reduce the level of overhead. The second one was to get bread pricing heading up rather than down. And the third one was to commission the meat factory. The restructuring costs have all been about allowing us to reduce the overheads. We've taken out in the first 6 months of the year approximately a fifth of the non-factory jobs across all of George Weston Foods. It's been a very significant exercise, but there has been a one-off cost to doing it. Bread pricing in the last 3 months has been moving up. We're very encouraged by that, and the mix within the business of branded and own label bread has also improved. The meat factory at Castlemaine has had a difficult time getting itself going. It is working much better now, and taken together, the overhead reduction, the improvement in bread, in the bread pricing, and a much better performance out of the meat business, we expect a significant turnaround in George Weston Foods profitability next year. The retail environment, the competitive environment in Australia remains difficult, but our business will have taken great strides this year to position itself for that environment and to produce us a meaningful return on the funds that we have employed there. On then to our ingredients businesses. I want to clearly divide them into two. The first one is ABF ingredients, which are our specialist ingredients, enzymes in particular, also yeast extracts. They've had a good first half of the year. They've seen both sales growth and profit growth. The new yeast extract factory in Harbin, which I mentioned as causing us problems 6 months ago and a year ago, it is now operating well, and that commissioning, I think, is behind us. So ABF ingredients have turned in a good performance in the first half, and we expect more of the same in the second. The yeast and bakery ingredients business, AB Mauri, there are many challenges in that business, and I won't go into them one by one. Essentially, we're getting good top-line growth in Mauri, as the developing world in particular adapts more westernized diets. There's increased demand for bread and therefore the ingredients that go into bread, and we're well positioned to serve that growth. The difficulty that we faced is that we've been unable to pass on cost rises through to our customers, I think because we don't have a sufficiently differentiated offering, and in that world where there is a lot of competition, we've been buffeted too much by cost rises. We've spent a lot of time working out what a sharper and more differentiated commercial offering looks like. We've spent a lot of time also working out how to get the cost base down, not least by sharing more effectively best practice and knowledge across what is a very wide network of factories and marketplaces. We now have to deliver on that thinking. Part of that is delivery is capital led. The new yeast plant in Veracruz will be finished by September, and we're also determined to keep up with the increases in demand in yeast, hence the factory expansions in China and India. The improvement in profitability of this business will come. It'll take time, but we have a route forward, and increasingly we have the management capability to deliver on those plans. Retail. 15% revenue growth is really, really strong. This business has tremendous momentum. Like-for-like sales growth of 2% in this environment is very creditable, and we are in the midst of a very extensive program of new store openings, which will continue into the foreseeable future. Trading from new stores has been really good in the first half. Now, that 15% sales growth hasn't turned into operating profit growth above what we've seen, that 2%, because as we flagged to you, the margin has reduced by 120 basis points. We think that at the very least that margin decline has now stopped. It will, in all likelihood, the margin will increase from the 9.5% level. But in any event, what we will see in the second half is revenue growth flowing through to the bottom line, as it always used to. Hence John's comments about Primark now returning to good profit growth. Trading through the year to date, therefore, then has been good. Christmas was particularly strong. We've had a lot of confidence from the very start in the ranges in store, and also in how the estate is looking. And I think I've covered the margin point on this slide already. Onto the selling space expansion, then a 14% increase half year to half year from 6.9 million square feet to 7.8. It's come from the UK, 8%, it's come from Spain, 37%, and it's also come obviously from continental Europe off a small base. Given that by year end we think that Iberia will have more stores than the Republic of Ireland, we've chosen to reorder this slide and put Iberia before the Republic of Ireland. I think that reflects how this group is changing. Some very large important stores opened in the first half, three in Germany, Hanover, 94,000 square feet, Essen, 90,000 square feet, and Dortmund, 52,000 square feet, but very significant stores also in the UK and trading extremely well, Edinburgh, which opened just before Christmas, and Stratford just before that. Both those are important and very profitable stores for us. Just to assure you that the sales densities in Germany remain very good, of our top 10 stores on a weekly basis, Germany takes three or four of the places very regularly. There's a lot more to come, and I apologize, this isn't just looking at the second half of the year as it takes us, well, in one case into spring 2013, but essentially through to calendar year end. Four Primark, major new stores. The second Oxford Street store will be open in the autumn. Two stores in Germany, one by the summer of this year in Schlossstrasse, and then a very exciting store coming up in Alexanderplatz in spring 2013. Karlsruhe is another one of these big German stores opening sometime around Christmas. Significant developments in Spain as well. This is the list of stores that we've either now opened since the half year ended or will be opening in the second half, 10 more stores. And then significant expansions in Newcastle, significant refits in Manchester and Mary Street. Manchester has never been refitted since the moment we moved into it. It's traded magnificently without it, but now it's time to upgrade that store. And then two stores in one new market in Austria, Innsbruck, and then Vienna stores will open in this calendar year as well. The logistics to supply that network then is well understood and increasingly in place. Nace will supply Ireland, two depots, Lutterworth and Thrapston for the UK. Torija now supplies just about all the goods which are sold in Spain, and by the middle of the summer, maybe late summer, Mönchengladbach will be built and will be supplying Northern Europe. The supply chain works well. So then on to just a quick summary of the group before we take questions. Good growth in group revenue and profit, and as we keep on saying, significantly more to come in the second half. The improved cash flow of the group is great, and the financial strength of ABF is manifest. Capital investment being maintained in Primark. If we could accelerate it, we would. And as some of these big projects, particularly Vivergo and the meat factory, are completed, it begins to reduce elsewhere across the group. Thank you very much for your attention. Happily take whatever questions you've got now.
Yeah, David.
David Hayes from Nomura. Just on the like-for-like 2%, just wonder if you can split that out between UK and Europe, at least give us an indication. And then just looking forward, obviously you've got the Jubilee and the Olympics with extra trading hours. Just wonder whether you can talk about whether you think that will be some benefit to the UK like-for-likes in the second half. And then secondly, just on the map that you just showed, There's a big white bit in the middle, which I think they call France, which kind of screams at you in terms of where that's an opportunity to work into that logistical picture. I just wonder whether with Austria coming online, whether there's other markets, including maybe France, that will come on in the next 12 to 18 months. Thank you.
Do you want to take
I'll take the like-for-like first, David. I think 2% clearly, and it's a bit over 2% on a rounded basis. Somewhat over 1% for the UK. Remember that the UK is still sort of two-thirds of the group, and probably mid-single digits then in Iberia. Like-for-likes aren't really that relevant, I've got to say, for Germany, where there's just a couple of stores in the like-for-like at that. So Spain still, you know, very, very, very healthy like-for-like growth in there.
On the Jubilee and Olympics, our major concern really has been working out how to get goods into central London for the Olympics. Stratford in particular is in the security zone. We've had to have those two warehouses security cleared, which they have been. Oxford Street receives about 9 deliveries a day. Oxford Street itself, I think, is a priority route. And whereas at the moment we're allowed to park trunkers outside the front door in Oxford Street, in the future we won't be able to. So lots of headaches in London. I think no doubt Stratford will have a fantastic sales time during the course of the Olympics. And I suspect Oxford Street may well too, although Bond Street Tube Station, which feeds so much of that, is one of the priority stations and one of the ones with the longest queues to it. So we'll see what happens. I think there's a lot of uncertainty of what the Olympics will do outside London, quite frankly, and you know whether people will sit around having barbecues, eating our bread rolls rather than going shopping in our stores, I don't know. I think there's a good chance that you know there'll be a feel-good factor on one hand, there'll be a kind of doing other things factor on the other hand, and we'll wait and see how that works out. France, new. Well, let me answer the question in terms of new markets generally. We have a lot that is going on in the markets that we're already in. Of course, we have a look at other places and have a think about them. We've got encouraging data out of our one of our stores on the French-German border. Which one?
Saarbrücken.
We track French credit card sales in Saarbrücken, and they're high, and they come at the weekend, so it tells me that people from at least parts of France are going across the border to see Primark, and French credit card sales in Oxford Street itself are amongst the highest subgroup. There's no reason to rule it out at the moment. We're just, you know, there's a lot of work going on elsewhere at the same time.
Thanks. Jamie.
Thanks. It's Jamie Eisenwater from Deutsche Bank. Just a couple. First, on the yeast business, given the difficulties there, just wondering if there's anything that can be done in terms of M&A or on the corporate side to try and bulk up or slim down or something to help the performance of that business. And then on Primark, there's obviously a re-acceleration in Spanish openings. I think you talked in the past about difficulty securing the right locations. Doesn't seem to be a problem at the moment, so I was just wondering whether something's changed in terms of the formats you're prepared to work with, or whether actually you're just finding more opportunities to get the right stores.
I think we've had a property team in Spain now for the best part of 3 years, and I think leads turn into property openings. That sort of process accelerates. We still have a real difficulty in Spain finding high street stores. Most of these businesses are in shopping centres. We haven't changed the format or what we're willing to accept. At the moment, most of the stores are smaller than the average for Northern Europe, although they're slightly larger than the European ones. They fit into a certain space in a Spanish shopping centre. We would love to have a big store in the centre of Madrid, in the centre of Valencia, in the centre of Barcelona. We just can't find them. Onto your yeast question, I think there may be the commercial approach that we believe will change this business is increasing bundling of yeast and other bakery ingredients. By and large, we have that suite of other bakery ingredients. We just don't cross-sell them well enough across the world. We do so in South America, Brazil, Argentina, and Andean region in particular, but we do a much less good job in some of the other markets. Now, in some places, it may be that some point in the future that we could do with buying a good bakery ingredients company in maybe in European countries. It's not the priority at the moment. The priority is to get the best out of what we've got. And that's more about sales discipline and approach to the marketplace than it is about than it is about bolting something on. I don't think there is a structural fix. Our competitors make a lot more money out of their yeast businesses than we do. We do think that inherently we have a competitive advantage in having this suite of other bakery ingredients, which by and large they don't. We just got to execute successfully on that, and that's what we're trying to do. There's also this piece on shared learning, particularly in the factories. We've got very differing levels of factory performance and yeast quality in different factories across the world, and we must be able to do a better job there.
Okay, thanks. Graham, yeah.
Thanks. It's Graham Jones from Panmure Gordon. Just on two questions on European sugar. The ABF seems to have sort of joined the chorus of voices against the European Commission's proposals for the abolition of quotas in 2015.
Yes.
I mean, is the abolition of quotas a done deal and it's just an argument about whether it's 2015 or 2020?
No, I don't think anything is done on the next round, the next review of that regime. We have, you know, the proposal out of the Commission. We have a very strong statement of disagreement for the European Parliament. The industry, both the growers and the processors, neither want abolition of quotas nor do they want them to happen in 2015. So I think that, no, I don't think anyone has accepted the quotas must go, and all we're arguing about is the date. I think a quota regime in the long run is a little bit of an anachronism in the European agricultural markets, but it served the European sugar market, the consumer and processor alike, very well.
Okay. And second question is, it might be slightly too early to ask this question, but I'll ask it anyway. In terms of European sugar pricing for 2013, I mean, it looks like European sugar market is still very, very tight. Any indications on sugar pricing for 2013,
you know, it's too early to tell. You're absolutely right.
Sudzucker seems to be talking about price increases rather than price cuts. But any comment at all?
The negotiating round has barely started, so I think it's very premature and sort of foolish, really, to speculate on it. Next time we're together, I think we'll have a lot more. We'll know.
Yeah. Okay. Just behind you, Jack. First of all, just. Yeah.
Thank you, Jack Gorman from Davies. Two quick questions, please, just as a follow-on perhaps to Graham's on the European space on sugar. Can you just give us an update on your own view on ACP and LDC supply flows? You've talked about Mali from an Illovo perspective. We've heard about the White Nile project and various delays there. Can you just perhaps give us a broader perspective on that as a first question? And secondly, You guys have been very quiet from an M&A perspective for a number of years now. Just wondering if you can give us a flavour for how you feel and how you think about your M&A pipeline, if there is one indeed, and what the opportunities may be there. Thanks.
Sure. I think picking up on the LDC question, or if you like, preferential sugar coming into the EU, it really does remain quite constrained. Certainly the Illovo volumes are below what we would have thought they would have been a few years ago in terms of, you know, a few hundred thousand tons coming into the EU. I think a number of other countries, you know, do have problems. So, you know, some of the bigger countries that could produce sugar, you know, Ethiopia and the Sudan, for example, are well down. So I must admit, we don't see the prospect of large flows of sugar coming from LDC countries anytime soon.
There's a second reason for that, which is the demand for sugar in those countries themselves in those regions is growing very strongly.
Yeah.
No, absolutely, George. Sorry. So no, it's one. So you know, it's both supply problems, it's demand in those countries as well, and then for that matter, it remains a high world sugar prices in terms of the EU competing for those. So hopefully that answers that one.
M&A. Yeah. I think two answers. Yes, we do have an M&A pipeline. We have. Each part of the group has targets that, you know, businesses which would help develop their own. At the same time, we've been in an era, we're in the midst of an era of very high capital expenditures. We have this huge opportunity in Primark, and we've also seen very starkly in the last 12 months the consequences on some of our competitors on leveraging their balance sheets beyond, keeping them at levels which used to be seen as appropriate and now seem to be rather racy. So a little bit of conservatism remains in place, lots of things to do with the money internally as well.
Great. Jeremy first, if we could. Yeah, thank you.
Morning, Jeremy Fialco, Redburn here. A couple of questions on the Australian grocery business. First one is, clearly you are taking quite a lot of steps to reduce your costs within the Australian grocery business. I guess what gives you the confidence that you yourselves will actually be able to kind of retain the benefits of that rather than the whole thing just getting passed on to the trade as seems to have happened previously? And secondly, if you could give a little bit more context around what's going on in the bread business and this sort of shift that you saw towards private label and then kind of away from private label, any kind of numbers or market shares or those sorts of things you can put on that to give us an idea of kind of the scale of that move and you put the potential reversal. Thanks.
Right. On the specifics of market shares, I think John might have to get back to you with numbers. I don't have them in my head in anything more direction. Let me take them in the reverse order. We saw Coles supermarket, one of the two big supermarkets, has been fighting for footfall with Woolworths on the back of some fairly extensive reduction in prices on a number of commodities, particularly milk, and then they used bread as well. They started advertising dollar bread very heavily, and that drove this big mix change to private label bread and cheapest on display bread. Now, we believe that just as we suffered from that change in trading stance by Coles, so did they. It's a very big, very profitable category in Australia, you can never be quite sure what drives a change in behavior, but we've seen a de-emphasizing of dollar bread in the first instance. In the second instance, we've seen other own label price points rise. So standard own label came down from $2.42 to $1.98. It's now back at $2.42. So we've also, in the midst of all that, launched a very good new white loaf called The One, which is white bread with very well fortified white bread, and that launch has been a tremendous success. It's early, so we've seen some trading from all sorts of places across to that new product. So that's short of numbers. That is, I think, the narrative for the Australian bread market. The cost base, yes, there's always a danger that you save money and then you hand it on. In the end, we think the structure and our strength in the bread business and also in the meat business will allow us to keep a fair chunk of those savings that we've made. We're well positioned in bread. We've got a good low cost base. We now think we have a good low cost base in the meat business, and those give us confidence that we'll be able to keep the benefits of the rationalization savings.
Okay, great. I think Martin was next.
Hi, it's Martin Dewitt, Investec. It was really a follow-on just on the last bit of the sugar empire. George, in China North, you didn't give the field yield. Could you give it to us? And just around that, could you you know, 2 years ago, I think the issue, as I understand it, in China and North, is you're still trying to get yields up, and beet was still relatively uncompetitive to maize for the local farmers, given the subsidy regime on maize. Has that changed? Is beet now a stronger proposition for the Chinese
farmer? Yes, it is. I mean, the price that we've paid for beet has gone up to reduce the competitiveness gap with maize. The crop is a more favoured one in the northeast of China than it was. I think it gets near equal status with maize. Off the top of my head, I think the field yields are up about 20%.
I think it was, I've got a figure of something like 2.3.
Yeah, from 1.9 or something
from
like
that. From 1.9 to, yeah, exactly. Yeah. 1.9 to 2.3 tonnes per mu.
Sorry.
The figure I would think is maybe 40-50
tonnes per hectare. Yeah, you've got to multiply by 15.
Yeah, because we're per mu, which is the measure in China that we've got in our head.
I've given you mu numbers, which are the ones we talk about in China. Yeah. With a bit of luck.
If we're succeeding, we're doing well then, Martin. I'll get you the tonnes per hectare, which I'm quite happy to give. But certainly those are the numbers per mu.
Yeah.
Yes, Alan. Alan Askin.
From UBS. Two questions. Firstly, on Primark. Obviously, in the first half of that you just reported, and the second half of the previous financial year, we saw the margins dip as you absorbed the cotton price. I'm just thinking, as we go into the next financial year, what should we be using? What should we be thinking of as a normalised margin level? Is it the margin we expect in the second half of this year, or somewhere between the two? So that was my first question. And my second question is just, it would be helpful if you could just talk us through some of the forthcoming milestones on the Vivergo. You know, when does it come onto the P&L? Will the depreciation initially outweigh the profits, and when would you expect the profits to ramp up to sort of, when will the plant be at capacity, for example? Thank you.
Do you want to do
the Primark margin? Oh, yeah, Primark margins. Well, look, without being sort of too specific, first of all, I'm always sort of wary of a normalised margin, because I don't want sort of people to sort of run with that. I think the direction of margin, I think, is very clear. So you'll see from the slide there that we're saying that second half on second half, we expect that margins will increase. I think that as we look into next year, I would see the margin certainly improving on probably what would be the margin for this year as a whole. By how many tens of basis points, I don't think I want to give guidance, particularly at this stage. Mainly because I don't think we have that good a visibility. I'm giving you direction, but I think I'd be wary of giving the quantum, Alan.
We've said that Vivergo will be fully commissioned by the end of spring. I think we're going to have to stretch our definition of spring a little. I think, though, by July it will be fully commissioned. That's the plan, at least at the moment. And I can see no reason why we wouldn't run it full from the start.
And so in this year you're asking about depreciation. We'll probably look at maybe 2 or 3 months of the depreciation in this financial year, and then full depreciation in the following year. And obviously that would be subsumed within the sort of profitability that we'd expect to get from it. Right, okay. Jeff, just beside you.
Just a quick one. Oh, sorry, Jeff Stent from Exam BNP Paribas. Just a quick one, John. Could you quantify the amount of restructuring that's been taken above the line, and just give us a feel for how that sort of splits into the, I think, three pockets, but maybe there's more pockets. I don't know. Thank you.
No, sure. Yeah, very quickly. Look, Allied Bakeries in excess of 10 million. George Weston Foods in excess of 15. So in the grocery segment, you've got basically 25 to 30 million of restructuring costs taken in the first half. We've also got some restructuring costs in ingredients, and that's probably the thick end of about 5 million in there as well. And so that's particularly over the closure of a small facility. Okay, and that's obviously well up on the previous half year. And as you well know, it's well above the line. Yeah, please. Sorry.
Hi, it's James Targett from Berenberg. Just on two questions. First, on Primark, I mean, could you give us some
Your thoughts generally on the appetite on the sort of the UK high street to pass forward lower cotton prices in terms of form of lower pricing and how that will impact you. And then secondly, on the UK grocery business, in terms of margin recovery, can we expect to see any margin recovery driven by cost recovery via pricing, or is it really down to the restructuring you've already spoken about? Thank you.
It was margin recovery. Will it be on pricing or will it be just cost reduction? James, where are you talking about in UK grocery?
Well, mainly the bakery.
Mainly the bakery, yeah. Business. Yeah, okay.
On that one, I think what we're planning for is reductions in the cost base. Rather than price recovery. I would note that the price of bread is cheaper now, or branded bread on average is cheaper than it was 4 years ago. We're certainly not forecasting any price recovery anytime soon.
The other one was lower cotton prices.
I think the thing that's caught the high street out, particularly last summer, but I think also going up into Christmas with stock levels, what has driven pricing is more been discounting stock to clear it than it has been any particular desire to achieve a certain price point. Last summer, there was a great deal of discounting. Discounting started on the autumn-winter ranges really before sales of them had started. I think that's what is driving high street performance, is what you've got in your warehouse, more than it is a strategy on price point selection.
So there's some other... Alicia, maybe, is if I can grab it. This lady here, yes.
Thanks. Alicia Forey with Canaccord Genuity. Just on Spain, Primark, the sales densities there, there's a lot of nervousness about what's going on with the consumer in those difficult markets. But against that, Primark should potentially take some market share given the better price proposition that you have. So if you could just tell us a little bit about what's going on with sales densities in those areas that you've been trading in for some time in Spain. And also, you mentioned capacity expansion in ingredients, and I think it was yeast and enzymes. Is that more about improving the cost efficiencies of the factories, or is that more about extending the product range that you alluded to?
In Spain, sales densities continue to increase. What is driving that? A lot of our stores are still reasonably new, and I think we would expect sales growth, like-for-like sales growth, certainly in the first 3 years of a store before anything settled down. The performance of the business in both Spain and also in Portugal has been very good indeed, we're very reassured by that. We've got a business growing strongly in Spain in this very difficult environment. We've also got a business growing very strongly in Germany in a much more friendly consumer environment. I think you look at the two and say, well, that's just testament to the strength of the offer, particularly in markets where that offer is reasonably new. On these ingredients expansions, there are... both are a combination of reducing the cost base. So the Harbin factory in yeast extracts will be a lower cost facility than the first plant in Hamburg, but it doesn't replace Hamburg, it supplements it with a similar range of products as the ones that Hamburg produces. Veracruz then is also designed to address the cost base of dry yeast, particularly in North America, which is currently being supplied out of La Salle in Montreal, but it also adds capacity in a commodity where demand is increasing steadily. The products it produces are the same ones again as we produce elsewhere.
Okay, I had a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Just set them for.
Good morning, it's Alex Sloan from SocGen. I've just got a question, follow-up to Martin's question on Chinese sugar. Obviously, you're seeing a nice improvement in yields. I think in the statement you talk about profit being considerably down for the year on lower pricing. I was just wondering if you could give a bit more colour on why that pricing has been coming down, if there's any change in fundamentals in that market. And secondly, just on Illovo, you've talked about the potential recovery in South African volumes. If I'm right, I think last year volumes in South Africa, volumes of sugar produced were around about 20 to 30% below the peak from a few years before that. Is there any reason why we can't get towards that peak sugar production in South Africa again? Thanks.
Okay, the profit decline in China is the consequence of two things. Firstly, you're absolutely right, the lower pricing. That lower pricing is a consequence, I think, of more sugar being imported, more high fructose corn syrup being on the market, and world prices of sugar, which do feed into the Chinese market, coming off a bit too. The second reason for profit decline is these lower extraction rates and lower yields, and then lower volumes of sugar produced in the south of China. We pay for cane on a per ton basis, whether it has a lot of sugar in it or little, we pay the same amount, and changes in the extraction rate and the yield of that sugar cane flow through to the bottom line very quickly. I think the volumes in the south, as a consequence of the of all the effects of the drought, is that production is down
to about 380,000 tons is expected this year,
from over 400,000 last year, and a capacity in the south of well over 500,000 tons. Then on to Illovo. The Illovo team in South Africa think that they can get the sugar production back up to previous levels. I think that we would think that that's difficult given that some of the land has come out of production, but it'll certainly be much better. Output will be much better than it's been for the last couple of years on the back not only of weather getting better, but also renewed investment going into the sugar growing sector in KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay, thanks. I think there was another question at the back there, thanks.
Hi there, it's Toby McCullough from Morgan Stanley. Just a quick follow-up question on Primark margins. Could you perhaps give us a little bit of colour on the difference in margins between the UK and the continental European business, or maybe put another way, the 120 basis point contraction that we had in the first half on first half, how much of that is just the absorption of the higher cotton price, and how much of that, if any, is down to regional mix, given the faster growth in the continental European business?
Oh, look, I mean, on the 120, I think very little is regional mix. So it really is right the way down to, you know, non-absorption of the cotton price, and actually, for that matter, non-absorption of VAT increases as well. Toby. So I think both of those are there. I think in terms of, without giving you the absolute sort of margins, I mean, clearly the UK has the highest margin. Quite close behind it is actually Spain. I mean, so Iberia has a very strong margin, which is, you know, really quite close, maybe 100 basis points or so short of where the UK is. Somewhat short of that, but it's in the very early stages, is Germany. And so, we will look very carefully at the development of the German estate. And obviously, we're looking to improve those margins as we go through. I think for Germany, it's too early, you know, to take that read. But I think what's very pleasing is that, you know, you saw 28 stores in Iberia. It's very, very close in terms of margins to the UK. Yeah, Alan, again.
Sorry, Alan Erskine again. Can I just ask a question on yeast? I mean, you've outlined opportunities to improve that business, and a lot of them seem to be self-help opportunities, like sharing best practice across the various factories and whatever. I mean, to be fair, this is a business you've owned for quite a few years, and it seems to have, you know, as it's been buffeted, some weaknesses have been exposed. It'd be interesting to get a bit of flavour for A, you know, what management changes you've effected there, and how much of a kind of, you know, root and branch analysis you've been forced to do because of the performance, and you know, just a little bit of more colour around that would be helpful.
Okay. I mean, I think two things have changed since in the time we've owned the business in the external environment. Firstly, we've seen these commodity cost increases, particularly molasses, but not solely molasses, and we've seen those in the last couple of years, and we've learnt as we've seen those that they're harder to pass on than we thought they would be. Interestingly, they're not particularly difficult to pass on in South America because of very successful bundling and distributor management intensity in those markets. The second thing is that we've seen the emergence of new competition, particularly out of China, but not exclusively there, and that has disrupted some of the some of the market that's been more relevant to some markets than others. There is a different management team in place at the moment, and we're going through a fairly intense exercise right now to make sure that the management capability, the management structures, the management roles, and the people in those roles is appropriate to what will be a fairly fundamental change in approach to our market in most of the markets in which we're operating.
Okay, great. Any final questions?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.